Finance team, assemble.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Barack Obama is getting his people in place, the people he'll count on to help guide the country out of recession. Obama will hold a news conference today to announce three hires. All three of them worked under President Clinton. Former Treasury official Gary Gensler will head up the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Georgetown law professor Daniel Tarullo gets a seat on the Federal Reserve Board. And former head of the SEC, Mary Shapiro, gets another crack at that job. Columbia professor John Coffey says Shapiro will face some heat.
She's going to have to deal with Congress because Congress is going to have a number of questions and is going to grill the SEC mercilessly about the Madoff scandal and about some other failures.
Obama's stimulus plan, meanwhile, is starting to come into focus. We're hearing it could be around $850 billion. Lots of spending on infrastructure, tax cuts for the middle and lower incomes, and no tax hikes for anybody. Wall Street would like to see some more details. So far, the Dow is down about 6 points to 88.17. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 off by just a couple points so far. In Asia, minor gains by the close. European shares are mixed so far. Oil is barely above $40 a barrel this morning. The Federal Reserve is expected to approve credit card reforms today. There'll be good changes for customers, but they will be a while in coming. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
The changes will put an end to rates that just go up whenever, and they'll prohibit one credit card company from changing your terms just because you might have paid late on another card. But the reforms aren't supposed to go into effect until 2010. Bert Flickinger with Strategic Resource Group says until then, credit card companies will actually charge consumers more in fees and fines while they still can.
2 million consumers will probably go down during that time, where the economy and the country can't afford to have any more consumers going down because of higher interest rate levels on credit card debt.
The American Bankers Association says the reforms will be a challenge to the credit card business that's already struggling with record customer defaults. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Lots of things swirling around the automakers this morning. The New York Times says the president wants a bailout by Christmas, and the Treasury and the White House are talking with GM and Chrysler about the terms. The Wall Street Journal says GM and Chrysler are talking to each other again about a merger, but GM denied that this morning. Auto analyst Jim Henry with BNet.com says it's a terrible time to talk merger anyway.
Mergers are hugely disruptive. Even in good conditions, it takes years and years after a merger to get things to settle down, get the corporate cultures to mesh, share what needs to be shared, eliminate what needs to be eliminated. They really don't need to be doing that while they're fighting for their lives.
Chrysler's latest first aid is starting tomorrow. It will shut down all of its North American plants for a month. Today, a Japanese trade group predicted auto sales in Japan will hit a 30-year low in 2009. This is the Morning Report for Thursday, December 18th on Marketplace.org. We talked a little bit about GM and Chrysler. Ford's condition isn't as dire, but it's had to really trim down. This year, Ford sold the Jaguar and Land Rover brands to the Indian company Tata. And now, Tata might be looking for a bailout from the British government. Stephen Beard reports from London.
When Tata bought the company in June, it said these two iconic British brands had global growth potential, but Tata has since cut production, and out of 15,000 British jobs, 850 will be gone by the end of the month. The British government says it's now talking to Tata about a bailout. No word yet about how much is required. The idea of taxpayers' money propping up a foreign-owned company might meet stiff resistance in the States, but not in Britain, says David Bailey of the Birmingham Business School.
Britain is different to the US in that it is much more open to foreign investments than the United States. Key industries have been taken over by foreign companies. They're seen as the fabric of the economy. I don't think there's a political problem about giving financial assistance.
Nevertheless, the British government says it doesn't have an open checkbook to bail out ailing private companies. Some commentators say Jaguar Land Rover is most likely to get either a government loan or loan guarantee. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Today we'll get a tally of bank losses around the world. Not that we really want to see that, but since the middle of last year, banks have lost almost $1 trillion. Here's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
The Institute of International Finance today releases its global economic outlook for 2009. The $1 trillion worth of bank losses were almost balanced out by about $920 billion in new investment, but a third of that came from governments. Charles DeLara is the Institute's managing director. He says some banks would have failed without the government cash.
The government help has helped contain what could have been a massive financial panic.
The remaining two-thirds of the bank's investments came from private sources, including funds run by Middle Eastern governments when they were flush with oil money. That cash has dried up along with investor confidence. Walter Gerasimovich is CEO of Metatron Asset Management.
They're going to be wary about infusing additional capital until they really see that there is a bit of a bottom.
Since the bottom is nowhere in sight, Gerasimovich says banks will rely more and more on government funds to prop them up. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
This time of year, a lot of people visit Bethlehem for obvious reasons. And right now, it's a pretty peaceful time in the region, so tourism is high. Most people don't go beyond Bethlehem, but that's something Palestinian business leaders would like to change. Here's Marketplace's Sam Eaton.
The Roman ruins of Sebastia, a few hours north of Bethlehem, date back more than 2,000 years. Here among the olive groves, you'll find some of the region's most extensive archaeological remains, and there's not a soul in sight.
As you see, we're in a large parking lot that's empty, and you see a number of shops that are closed as well. Because there are not many tourist traffic coming here.
At least not since 2000, when Israeli soldiers blocked access to the village after the second Palestinian uprising. Today, me and my guide, Nasser Abu Farha, are the only visitors, and word gets out fast. Adli Mahmoud Musla unbolts the heavy doors to a souvenir shop and invites us in.
When was the last time you made a sale from the shop to a tourist?
Almost a year ago, a small sale.
Musla hopes that peace with Israel will someday usher in a new era of tourism for the West Bank. But Palestinian-American businessman Sam Bahor says that era won't come without new investments, and the time to make them is now.
In normal business terms, high risk means high return. Putting seeds into the economy today may pay off big time.
Both for investors and for the Palestinian people. The recent tourism revival in Bethlehem has helped cut the city's unemployment rate by more than half. And that's also good for Israel. Bahor says every new job means one less protester throwing rocks at Israeli tanks.
The day the Israelis wake up and understand that this occupation is not only affecting us, but it's even affecting their own ability to grow, I think that we're going to see an influx of tourists that will be written about for a very long time.
That day could not come any sooner to towns like Sebastia. As we leave, dozens of young men play soccer in a parking lot built for tour buses. And the shopkeeper I spoke with closes his store again, hoping another year won't go by before he makes his next sale. In the West Bank, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Today, the head of the International Monetary Fund said a U.S. recovery was possible by early 2010. That seems to be the consensus, a slow, grinding recession, kind of an elongated U-shape. But our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell, isn't really a consensus kind of guy. He thinks the recovery will be more like a V, a dramatic turnaround sometime next year. Okay, Chris, make your case.
You know what? There's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of money that the the monetary authorities, the central bankers, the treasuries have put out into the market. And it's all on the sidelines.
It's all sitting in cash.
It's all sitting in cash. It just seems to me that there is so much fear and so much cash on the sidelines that when people even get a little bit of confidence, just a little bit of confidence, the money will just go from being static to opportunistic. I can do pretty good if I put my money into the stock market. And it's just going to be this V. And then we're just going to come right out of this recession really fast.
Chris, I love your optimism. But what is the possible obstacle to your theory of the V?
The real obstacle is the banking system continues to lose confidence. And if the banking system continues to hoard money and just hold on to it, you know, then we're going to be talking about a much more serious scenario than the one that I'm painting right now.
All right. Well, let's say people jump back in all at the same time.
Right.
What implication does that have for the rest of the economy beyond the stock market?
Oh, for the rest of the economy, what happens is businesses, they start rebuilding their inventories. Then you're back into a classic post-World War II upturn in the business cycle where businesses all of a sudden go, uh-oh. You know, I don't have enough inventory here. People are coming into my store. People are going on the internet. They want to buy my product, my goods, my services, and I don't have the inventory. I don't got the people. I got to call some people back. What the rebound in the markets will signal to business is better times are ahead. I better position myself.
With your theory of the V, you're shooting up pretty quickly.
Yes.
Which is something we ought to be careful with, I would think, based on what has just happened.
Absolutely. And at that point, it's going to be the real challenge for a lot of both monetary policy and fiscal policy. We just look at what the government's going to do, because with monetary policy, then it's going to be a little bit of a mop-up operation. Yeah, because we don't want to get into an inflationary situation. And on the fiscal side, what everyone's going to be asking is, what are you going to do about the debt? All right, you succeeded.
Right.
You did. You succeeded. But now what? Now how do you start paying it down? What's the plan? So both fiscal and monetary authorities will face a real challenge once the turnaround comes. But you want to know something? Sometimes there are some challenges you want. That's one of them.
All right, our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Share your opinion with us and catch much more coverage of the economic fallout online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.